All right. Good morning. So as we get started this morning, it's been kind of a busy week for us. Last Sunday, we had Ella's commencement and graduation at the Coliseum. And this week, we're getting ready for her graduation party, her open house that we're doing. And part of that, Beth has been working with one of her friends to put photo boards together. And it's my job to find all of the photos because they're not printed like they used to be. They're all digital, and over the years they've gone to different places. So we've had a few tense moments where we weren't sure we could find some of them, but we did. So that's a good thing. But as we were going through the photos, I'm reminded of how quickly things have happened. Many of you, some of you were there when Ella was first born and said, you know what, be ready, it's going to go so fast. And you hear that, but you can't process it. Even though I believed it to be true, you can't really quantify it on your way in how fast those 18 years will go. And as I'm looking through pictures, as we're going through, I remember we pulled up a couple of pictures of just after we brought Ella home from the hospital. And there's one picture in particular that comes to mind. It's in the rear view of the old Oldsmobile that we had at the time, where Ella's car seat is situated that January evening. And I'm looking back at her. And I remember how terrified I was, even that I put the car seat in correctly. Those days before we left, the nurses were saying, oh, should we give you some rest? Should we bring Ella back to the nursery? And Beth and I were like, we got to figure out what we're doing now while we have help. Because in a day or so, we're on our own. I've never driven more slowly than I did that first day I took Ella and Beth home from the hospital. And just like that, it goes so fast. See, all of us want to be good fathers. Dads, we want to be good fathers. But sometimes it's hard to know what it means to be a good father. Sure, there are some that are easy. And yesterday there were some that I thought were easy. I took Jeffrey, the girls went down to a bridal shower in Indianapolis for one of my cousins. And it was just Jeffrey and I, so we decided to go see a movie. And it was funny because we weren't the only father and son that decided to go see a movie on Father's Day weekend. That was pretty much everyone there to see Transformers. So we went and go to see the movie, and the parking lot's pretty full. And as we're pulling out of the car, I see that there are many other dads and sons getting out of the car as we all walk together. And really parked right next to us, there was a father and two other sons. And I'm not trying to be judgmental here, but I start out feeling like, you know what, this is cool. This is the time for the dads to do this. And then as soon as the doors opened up, there was this like marijuana smoke that just kind of filled out around their car and my car. So much so I had to cough. And it becomes apparent. We all want to be good fathers. But sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes the dads that are here have made mistakes. What does it mean for us to be good fathers? Well, I think as we look through and finish up our time in Exodus, we can look to Moses as an example. Now, this isn't a comprehensive list of everything a good father does, but there are three things that we see in Moses' life that I believe we would do well to emulate. And just like we say on Mother's Day, or did on say on Mother's Day, this doesn't just apply to fathers. It applies to mothers too. It applies to any of us who would seek to lead in our community. These same principles, they play out whether you're a father or not. But I believe that we can all learn to be good fathers, reflecting the image of our good, good Father in heaven. We follow the example of Moses we see here in Exodus chapter 18. First thing that I want to draw our attention to this morning is that a good father honors his father and father-in-law. Verse 7, so Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. They greeted each other and then went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law about everything that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all the hardships they had met along the way, and how the Lord had saved them. Moses, at this point in our story, is the great leader of Israel. He's kind of a big deal. Everyone looks up to Moses. Sure, they complain to him a lot. We've talked about that the past few weeks. But they all look up to him. And here Jethro comes. Jethro brings with him the rest of his family, his wife, Jethro's daughter, and his sons, who we'll talk more about here in a bit. Moses had sent them away when things got really kind of difficult in our Exodus story, when it became quite dangerous. And for those of you who would worry about that, if you look at the timeline, these weren't toddlers that Moses was sending away with their mother. Based on the timeline, they were likely grown men. But they were a family, they were a tribe. And Moses said to stay safe, I need you to go with your father while I do what God calls us to do here in Egypt. So this is a beautiful picture of reuniting, where Jethro is bringing back the family and he's there to hear what God had done. He's there to see what God had done through this difficult journey. Remember, Jethro was there with the family at the burning bush when Moses was called, when he didn't know what he was going to do, when he saw that the road was difficult. Jethro blessed Moses as he went out to go do this thing, and now on the return side of it, he's bringing the family back to celebrate and to see what God has done. But Moses had left Jethro's house humbled, and now Jethro's coming back and seeing Moses, the great leader. But in spite of all that, even though Moses has been celebrated by God and by his people, he chooses to humble himself and honor Jethro. What does he do? He goes out and he bows down and he kisses him. He humbles himself before Jethro. And he happily shares all that God is doing, the testimony of what God is doing. In church, the lesson that we teach to our children in Sunday school, that they need to honor their father and their mothers, there's really no controversy there. In fact, it's one of the only commands the scriptures tell us that comes with a promise that you will live long and prosperous in the land that God is preparing. But how often do we talk about it as adults? See, this wasn't a command just given to the children. It was a command given to all the people of Israel to honor their parents, to honor the generation that came before them. And there's this principle that we can't expect our children to honor and respect us if we don't pass that honor and respect on to the previous generation. And I understand some of you will say, Well, Pastor Jeff, you know, I want to honor my parents, but you don't know what they did. You don't know the things they said to me. You don't know the things they did to me. And I get that. I've heard some of your stories, and I know that there's some difficulty there. But that's where forgiveness comes in. We can honor them without allowing them to necessarily hurt you again. Some of us, and I was blessed with a great father. And I know some of you were blessed with an earthly father that was harsh and hard. But still, we are called to honor them in every best way that we can. The command is no less valid when we turn 18 and leave the house. One of my favorite things to do in youth ministry, one of my favorite moments was when I would preach out of 2 Timothy chapter 3. Now, we've been blessed with great teenagers throughout different periods of ministry in church, some here and others at other churches. But it's almost the same every time we preach through this list. Because it's a list of sins, a list of things that we're to avoid. So 2 Timothy chapter 3. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last day. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, have nothing to do with such people. We'll read that list, and they're like, yeah, yeah, and they're like, disobedient to their parents. Wait, that's not one of the big sins, is it? And to God, sin is sin. We like to categorize them in the lesser sins, the greater sins, the really, really bad sins, the sins we don't talk about. But to God, sin is sin. It's amazing to see that light bulb come up for younger people when they realize, well, no, I thought that one was just more of a when it's convenient, when I feel like it. But Moses modeled before his children that he would honor his own father. Again, it's hard to expect our children to honor us if we don't honor others. And this really goes beyond our parents because God calls us to honor leaders. He calls us to honor government leaders, even ones that we don't like. And if we don't do that, it's hard for us to get the honor and the respect that God has laid out for us if we're not able to model that forward, especially in front of our children and our grandchildren and those that we're in community with. Second thing I want to draw our attention to on this Father's Day morning is that a good father delights in his family. Verse 5, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' sons and wives, came to him in the wilderness where he was camped near the mountain of God. Jethro sent word to him, I, your father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and your two sons. Again, Moses didn't send away toddlers. He didn't put that burden onto his wife. I've heard some teach that, and the timeline just does not show that at all. Moses had been there with Jethro for a long time before he ended up going out to do the thing God called him to do in Egypt. But he's excited to see his children, and like his so many fathers before him, I haven't done the math for how many generations, but like Joseph, the name of Moses' sons was significant. We see in the first few verses, and her two sons, one was named Geshurim, for Moses said, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. And the other was named Eleazar, for he said, my father's God was my helper, and he saved me from the sword of Pharaoh. Moses loved his family, and he loved his children, and his children had names that were significant. They were super meaningful to what God had been doing in his life, and now he's excited to delight in their return, to delight in their presence, even though now they are young men. And for us to be good fathers, good parents, we must also delight in our children. But this sometimes is harder than we think. In the business world, I get to rub shoulders with a lot of people, and it wasn't that long ago that I was sitting at a small shop working on their internet, trying to get it going again, And it was a man that I know quite well, and he was talking about just how much his children frustrate him. And I get it. What his children were doing sounded very frustrating. But not only was he not delighted in his children, there was this kind of anger and wrath to the point where he said, some days I think I even hate them. We had as much of a conversation about that as we could, and I offered to pray for him, and he accepted. But we go through life, and while we want to love our families, while we want to delight in our children, sometimes because of their behavior, because of the circumstances, the difficulty around it, we struggle. We think about the story of the prodigal son. That father wanted to delight in his child, but while his child was out, while his child was living in sin, spending his inheritance, as much as he loved his child, I'm sure there was grief and there was anguish and there was heartache. We don't see the story of what happens to the father while the child is out, but when he returns, the father rejoices at the return of his son. And he delights in his son and throws a feast, a banquet, so much so that the other brother becomes jealous. We have to learn to delight in our family, and sometimes things get hard. It won't always be easy. I was reading a book a couple of years ago, and there was one passage that really struck me, and I had to chew on it and work through it for a while. It was Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. And yes, it's kind of a self-help book. I've watched Jordan Peterson's story as he has kind of gone all over the place in his journey through the scriptures and a journey really that I pray leads him to Jesus. But in one of the rules, he says, do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. And that one rubbed me the wrong way at first. What power do we have as parents to keep our children with the Lord? Don't children have their own choices? Don't they make their own decisions? And we often take it as it, like there's these two very extreme options. It's either always the parent's responsibility for how the child turns out, or it's completely out of their hands. And if a child goes and turns away from the Lord and goes and does their own thing completely, that's just the way it happened. It was all the child's. It's either all nature or all nurture. But that's not how anything actually is. It's never this extreme. There's all of these things that come together and make it possible. And one of the ones that I have come to realize is that as parents, as I watch my own parenting and I see the parenting of those that I'm in community with, we have the ability to stop our children from doing things, from developing habits, not always, but much of the time, that bring up those feelings of disgust and dislike within us. It's why we discipline our children when they're young. That's why we don't let them just do anything. Because at the end of the day, we need to be able to delight in our children. So we have to train them to do the right thing, to be respectful. Now, I'm not asking for anyone to be harsh or heavy-handed. But at the end of the day, the way our children turn out, we have a say and a hand in that. Not 100%. Our children still make their own choices. And as I'm learning from my daughter who turned 18, that when they're adults, some of their decisions are their own. And that's a good thing, especially as we get into the last point. But we have to be careful that we're speaking into their lives, that when they're young enough, we're bringing the hand of discipline, the gentle, loving hand of discipline, and sometimes the rod of discipline, to keep them from going down a path and becoming a person that we don't recognize, even one that we dislike. Because God is calling us to delight, to love, to enjoy our family. That also means, dads, we have to take time out. It's hard. There are so many burdens and so many responsibilities, and there will always be more money. There will always be a fancier car, a nicer house. There will always be a more expensive college we can send our children to, a bigger opportunity. The world is full of them. And it's easy to justify, well, I'm doing this for my family. I'm working these long hours for my family. But there are times that we might delight in our work and our craftsmanship more than we delight in our families. And God wants our children, He wants our families, our spouse, to be the thing that brings us joy in this world. He wants us to be excited to come home to them. And if you're not there, that's something that we can pray and see God change in our heart and in our mind. Some of it may be that we need better boundaries. If we're letting our children run all over us, if all we do is come home and see a hand that says, money, please, then we've got work to do. Just like the Sabbath. You hear the Sabbath and you're like, oh, I wish I could take a Sabbath. No, that's work that we have to do as men of God. To do enough work ahead of time so that we're ready to take the Sabbath when it comes. It's not something that just falls into our lap and happens. It's because of preparation. The same thing is true when it comes to delighting in our families. Men, we understand this. I hope we do, at least when it comes to date night. If you don't put any plan or preparation into date night's not going to go very well. You're not going to have very much fun, and your spouse isn't going to be too happy about it. Well, the same preparation needs to go into preparing our children so that we can delight in them and see them shine and grow into the people God has created them to be. And finally, this morning, a good father prepares his people. He prepares his children, but he also prepares his community and the people that he serves alongside. Verse 17, Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear themselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone." So why would Moses allow himself to be put into a place where he has the burden of the whole community on his shoulders? Well, because it feels good to be needed. Pastors can relate to this because we tend to have what they call a savior complex. We like to come in and save the day. We like to be needed. It's a good feeling when you can come in and offer something that everyone else needs in that moment. But Jethro says to Moses, "This is not good. You can't be the only one who can provide these needs. You cannot be the bottleneck between the people and God. You have to appoint others, train up others, so that you alone are not carrying this burden." And Moses understands this. He honors his father-in-law by taking his advice. And says, okay. They determined that Moses would weigh in on the most difficult decisions, but on the easy ones, on the ones that were kind of a no-brainer, he would appoint judges. And this is a huge transition in the whole nation of Israel, where they go from Moses being the leader to now developing other leaders and the judges that would come in later throughout the story. We have Moses, then we have the time of judges, and then we go into the time of kings in the nation of Israel's history. This is when we begin to prepare the next generation for what God is doing to go take the promised land. So we see Joshua begin to be raised up as the next leader. It feels good to be needed. That's true as parents, too. I'm not going to lie, I won't miss the diaper stage a whole lot. Beth makes it sound like I didn't change any diapers, but I changed quite a few. Not nearly as many as she did, but I changed quite a few. One of the pictures, she said, Jeff, this might be your first diaper that you changed. Like, I changed diapers before we had children. Thank you very much. But that was all in good fun. Again, I don't think I'll miss the diaper stage, that form of reliance. That was a little much. But today, I miss those days when the children would come up and say, Dad, Daddy, I need you to help me tie my shoe. When they would do it with like a cheerful voice, it wasn't a demand. It wasn't, I need this right now. It wasn't a, how dare you haven't done this for me already. It was a, Daddy, could you help me tie my shoe? It's good to be needed. It feels good to be able to contribute. But Jethro understood that Moses couldn't let everything rest on his shoulders. He needed to prepare capable people to help carry the load. And in our families, it's almost never too early to start preparing our children to carry the load in the household, in the family, in the community, for the future. Our children are capable of far more than we think. I remember the first time I saw the movie The Nativity. And you see that they're like 13-year-olds, Mary and Joseph, when they became parents to Jesus. And I understand, different day and age, different culture. I'm not encouraging any 13-year-olds to go start a family. But back in Jesus' time, responsibility was put on children at a very young age. That's why in the Jewish community, they bar mitzvah a boy. He becomes a man at 13. Today, we have college, you graduate college, you move back with your parents for about 5 years, and what's it, 26 when you're off your parents' insurance? Is that the moment we should throw the party that a child becomes a man? Maybe it's 24, I don't know. But we have this prolonged adolescence that's in our culture, and I don't fully understand it. God is calling us as parents, as leaders in the church and the community, to always, always be looking for how we can replace ourselves. There is plenty of work to be done. There is plenty of burden. There is, God's mission in this world is so big that we will never run out of responsibility. You don't have to worry about being irrelevant and unneeded. Our eyes have to always be on how do we prepare the next generation, and that's got to begin with our children. One of the reasons that the studies show that pastors' kids sometimes struggle is because mom and dad will spend more attention focusing on how to build up the church than they do how to build up their family. They'll spend more energy discipling the church than they did discipling their own children. And it's something we have to be careful of. So it begins at home. But God is calling us to empower and look for every opportunity to give responsibility and to call our children into responsibility, whether we are their parent, whether we are community members in the church, or whether we are sending them forth to serve Fort Wayne, the United States, or the world. God is calling us as a community to empower and to build responsibility in the next generation. It's when a father properly prepares his children that he can, at the most, delight in them. It's a tremendous feeling as a parent to watch your kid go through something difficult, but yet thrive and succeed and make it to the other side. And I can only imagine Jethro's pride when Moses retold the story of what God had used him to do with all of the plagues, with the Passover, with the Exodus out of Egypt, with the story of the Red Sea being separated and all of the Egyptian army being cast over and washed over by the waves, as Moses is telling the story of the hardship and the difficulty and everything that he went through, Jethro had to remember that he was there at the very beginning to lay a hand of blessing upon Moses to say, God is with you, now go. And now he gets to delight in his return. So again, as we celebrate Father's Day, I know some of you have earthly fathers that were fantastic. Others of you had earthly fathers that were hard men. Some of you have earthly fathers that have gone on to heaven. Others have fathers that are still here today. Some of you would love to have been fathers but didn't have the opportunity. And others of you were fathers that maybe lost children or had children that walked in a wayward way. We come into these days with a lot of baggage sometimes, with a mixed story, but we have to know and understand that we have a good, good Father. Whether it's been reflected in our earthly father or not, regardless of where you've come in, if you will let him, God the Father will be that good, good Father who's always there for you. That's why we sing the closing song, The Family of God, because we have been adopted in, we have been called into this wonderful family, and we share one fantastic Father. And some of us have been fortunate enough to see that reflected in the lives of our earthly fathers. So we have a good, good Father, and we've been blessed with an earthly Father that has done their best to reflect and resemble and embody the good, good Father in heaven. Worship team, would you come forward?